I exhaled roughly. Can the record just show? I got through this conversation without a drink or a cigarette. He busted out laughing and our eyes met. A moment, a heartbeat. And then we were in each other's arms, holding on tight. Jonah, I whispered against his neck.
I know.
I don't. I can't. He rocked me gently.
I know.
We stayed there a long time until Jonah gave me a final squeeze and held me by the shoulders.
Let's get back. It's late. We'll get some sleep, and in the morning.
Jimmy comes to take me to the airport, I said. What do I do then?
You go with him. Talk to Lola. Decide to either stay with the band or work out how to quit if that's what you need to do. You'll find a way.
And what about you?
Don't worry about me.
I looked up at him sharply. A little late for that, pal. His smile was gentle and quiet, and his voice quavered as he spoke.
You'll either keep in touch with me, or you won't. If you do, I'll be here for you. And if you don't, I'll understand. I promise you I'll understand. Okay?
I didn't say okay. Not one bit of this was okay. My mind hadn't wrapped around everything yet. I had more tears to cry, but now my eyes felt drained and numb. We walked out of the Bellagio hand in hand, out from under the glass flowers. A garden that would never wilt or die. We went back to his place. Without discussion, I piled the pillows high on the bed so he could lay inclined. Then I curled up next to him. I understood why he didn't tell everyone his situation. Pain like this went beyond the realm of private or personal. It lived down deep, beneath everything superficial, and drew everyone who knew it down deep with it. It closed distances. We lay curled up in each other, and I laid my head against his chest. Does this hurt? I whispered. The rumble of his voice in my ear was drowsy.
No, I'm all right.
Does anything hurt right now?
No, Casey.
Jonah stroked my hair, held me tighter.
Right now, nothing hurts.
He rose and fell with easy breathing. Beneath my ear, his heartbeat strong and steady. A flicker of hope in me flared, determined to burn all night long. Chapter 17. Casey. I looked out the window to see a black sedan roll into the parking lot of Jonah's complex. Jimmy Ray got out, leaned against the fender, and lit a cigarette. I turned to face Jonah at the kitchen counter. He's here, I said.
Okay.
I have to go, I said, trying to muster strength for the decision that lay ahead. I'd gone to sleep last night, floating on hopeful peace, and woke up feeling seasick. The impact of Jonah's revelation descended like a storm, howling through my head. Last night, I thought I knew what to do. This morning, I didn't know where I was and didn't trust myself to be strong enough for anyone. The band, Jonah, or even myself. My only certainty was if I didn't continue the tour while I tried to figure things out, the legal hammer would fall for breaking my contract, and I'd be left with no options at all. I turned from the window. Let's go. Jonah touched my shoulder gently.
I'll walk you out.
He carried my bags for me to the parking lot where Jimmy waited impatiently, the heat cloying and making him even more anxious than usual. I leaned close to Jonah. I don't want to say goodbye with him watching.
Neither do I.
Need one more minute, Jimmy, I called, my voice scratchy with the echo of tears. Jimmy checked his watch and mumbled something as Jonah set down my bags at the edge of the parking lot. We walked over to the small courtyard, and I noticed he wore a light jacket, even though the temperature must have been pushing 100. He pulled a softball-sized box from the pocket and held it out to me.
A going-away present,
he said, a tremor at the edge of his voice. I took the box and opened it. The sun glinted off glass, and tears blurred my eyes. It was the perfume bottle, finished and perfect. Elegant ribbons of violet and indigo swirled around its small, squat body. The neck opened in a flat circle, and the stopper was a beautiful, clear marble. I held it up, letting the sun shine through the empty interior. Not empty, I thought. It holds Jonah's breath. Afraid I would drop it, I put the bottle back in its box and held it tightly to me. I looked up at him. I'm afraid, I whispered. I'm afraid if I go, I'm failing myself. If I stay, I fail the band. And you said hanging around hospitals wasn't your ex-girlfriend's thing. It's not mine either. I'm so scared I'll fail you if I stay. His smile was so sweet and warm, but sad too, yellow tinged with blue.
You can't fail me. I don't expect anything from you, Casey. Only friendship, as much or as little as you want to give.
I don't know what to do.
You will, Jonah said. Go to your room in your next house or hotel, away from the band. Shut the door and lock it. And in the quiet, ask yourself what you really want to do. You, Casey Dawson, what do you want for yourself? Don't think about me, or Lola, or Jimmy, or anyone else. Just you.
What I wanted. I thought I knew, but could I come back here for it? Could I find the strength to stand on my own? And if I did, how fast would the 4 months go? Could I watch Jonah? I shuddered, unwilling to even finish the thought. And the coward in me whispered I didn't have the backbone for what I wanted. Contracts are almost impossible to break, I said. I might be stuck no matter what.
You might. But the right thing will always find a way.
He took a step closer.
Be safe, okay? Above all else, be safe.
I nodded and leaned against him. His arms went around me and I turned my face into his chest, inhaling deeply. I wanted to take some of Jonah with me, the part that kept me settled and calm and quiet. We walked back out to the parking lot where Jimmy was pacing in front of the sedan and tugging at his collar of his dress shirt in the heat.
Jesus, kitten, I'm dying out here. Let's go already. We got to be at the airport in 2 hours.
He and Jonah eyed each other hard while the sedan driver took my bags and stowed them in the trunk. The driver held the door open for me, and Jimmy motioned for me to get in. Jonah leveled a finger at Jimmy.
You take care of her.
Of course. We got a brand new opening act as promised.
Jimmy's smile was bright and fake.
I take care of my girls. They're like daughters to me.
Jonah raised an eyebrow, and his stare hardened to ice. Jimmy coughed.
Never mind,
he said, climbing into the car.
We got a schedule to keep.
I turned back to Jonah. He looked down at me, and our eyes locked. In the next heartbeat, I was standing on my tiptoes and pressing my lips to his. He made a sound in his chest, as if in pain, and I felt the answering ache in mine. I pulled away before the soft kiss became a hard promise I couldn't keep. I turned and climbed into the car and didn't look back. Not even to wave. I wasn't ready to say goodbye. Chapter 18. Casey. The Summerlin house was trashed. I stood in the center of my room, staring at the mess. The cigarette burns in the carpet, the makeup residue in the sink, unidentifiable stains on the carpet.
I packed for you,
Lola said from the door. I jumped, my heart pounding. You scared me. My nerves were shot. I sat on the unmade bed and smoothed out the comforter, as if it helped. This place is a disaster. Lola shrugged.
That's what security deposits are for.
She crossed her arms.
So, are you with us?
I'm here, aren't I?
You're with us, but are you with us? They don't call it a band for nothing, you know. We need to play as a whole. Are you ready to do that now?
I shrugged, not looking at her.
Sure.
I heard Lola sigh and shift on her heels.
Is it the guy? The limo driver?
What about him?
Is he another Chet? Another guy who's going to fuck you up for God knows how many years? Because honestly, Casey, he's dying.
Lola's arms dropped to her side.
What do you mean he's dying?
I stared at her, shaking my head. Her chin tilted.
You mean like, dying, dying?
I nodded.
Cancer?
Heart failure. Slow heart failure. Slow failure that's going to take him so fucking fast.
Shit.
Lola sat next to me on the bed.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
She put her arms around me, though I hardly felt it.
Well, you met him on Friday night, right? Or Saturday morning? Whenever you regained consciousness on his couch?
Yeah, I said. So what?
So it sucks he's sick, but you've known him all of 4 days, if that?
I blinked at her. And?
I'm just saying, you found out before you got in too deep. The last thing you'd want is to get involved with someone who can't give you a future.
No. I shot off the bed, shaking my head vigorously now. No, you are not going to do this.
Do what? Give you a reality check?
Talk about him. You don't know. I waved my hands. Never mind. I'm not talking to you about him. Or these 4 days. They're mine. So let's fucking go already. We have a plane to catch.
Glad to hear it, said a voice at the door.
Jeannie leaned in against the jamb, arms crossed over her black midriff-bearing shirt. She tossed a lock of dark hair out of her eyes.
You ready to rejoin us?
We're cool, Jeannie,
Lola said, staring at me. Her eyes soft with compassion, but hard with don't fuck this up.
She's ready, right? She needed a little break, some time to chill. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I rested up, I said. Now I'm ready.
Good, Jeannie replied.
As I pushed past her, she threw out the empty threat she'd been using on me since I joined the band.
Because there are 100 guitarists who would kill to have your job.
I muttered under my breath. Promise? Friday was the first concert in Denver, and I did the show sober. To say it was a disaster was being kind. I fucked up my solo on Talk Me Down. I came in late on 3 different songs, and I riffed the opening chords for Taste This at the end of the set, forgetting we'd played it already. Jeannie had to stop the show and make a joke about an early encore while shooting me a death glare.
What the actual fuck, Casey?
She screeched at me in the green room.
You go and take a leave of absence for 4 days, supposedly to get your shit together, and then come back more flaky than before. Are you trying to ruin us?
Violet and even Lola were waiting for an answer. I'm sorry, I said. I was out of it tonight. I'll be fine tomorrow, I promise. But I wasn't. Not on the inside, anyway. I managed to get through the next night's concert without fucking up, but the second it was over, I hit the green room liquor stash hard. The first burning taste of whiskey nearly made me puke. The second was better. By the fifth, the ache in my heart wasn't entirely gone, but it was bearable. We partied back at our hotel, with the band and 50 of our closest friends. Crowded into the suites Jimmy rented. I'd never been claustrophobic, but I felt it that night. Too many bodies, talking too loudly, and drinking too much. Smoke, from pot and cigarettes,
hung in the air like a gray haze, and the music was so loud, I could hardly hear the guy hanging off my shoulder. He was tall, handsome in a slick kind of way, like a mobster. His stubble grazed my cheek as he leaned in.
Not a roadie or a part of the crew. A friend of the record execs, maybe.
Or not.
I didn't know who he was, and I was too drunk to find out.
Did it matter? He could be anyone. And I could be anyone to him. Anyone plus anyone equals no one, I slurred.
You're wasted,
he laughed. He leaned in, his breath wet with vodka on my ear.
You want to get out of here?
Yeah, I said. I really do. I really fucking want to get out of here. He smiled with hooded eyes and started to walk me out. I resisted and stepped away from him, staggering a little. Let me powder my nose, I said. That perked him up even more.
You got some blow?
I have to take a piss, I said loudly. I passed Jimmy and Violet and Lola, all talking and laughing. I ducked and weaved to avoid being spotted. Bypassing the bathroom, I hurried out of the suite, down the hall to my own room. The swirling pattern on the carpet made me dizzy. I expected the mobster to appear any moment behind me, as if this were a bad horror movie I'd already seen and knew what was going to happen. I fumbled the key card into the lock and practically fell inside. I slammed the door, locked it, and threw the deadbolt. The strength ebbed from me, and I slid down the door, tears streaming down my cheeks. I swiped my eyes, and my mascara left streaks on the back of my hands. Even two rooms away, I could still hear the party. I covered my ears, staring down at the purse in my lap, my cell phone sliding out. I picked it up, went to my contacts, and found Jonah's number. My thumb hovered over the call button, but wouldn't touch it. I couldn't call him drunk and hysterical. It would worry him to the core, and what could he do about it anyway? It was too fucking humiliating. We'd been separated as many days as we'd been together, and I'd already fallen apart. He'd probably finished 8 more pieces of his installation. His legacy. I was drunk on a hotel room floor. I kicked off my black stilettos and struggled to my feet, my sights on the minibar. I threw it open, grabbed a tiny bottle of something brown, and started to twist the top, ready to turn the night into oblivion. Then my bleary gaze landed on the perfume bottle. The beautiful, perfect vessel with its delicate ribbons of purple spiraling around the middle. I stared. It was no accident my sober self had set it on top of the little cabinet above the minibar, instead of leaving it in the bathroom with the rest of my perfume. I set the booze down, but didn't pick up the perfume bottle. Jonah made it for me. If I broke it, I'd have nothing left of him. I sucked in a deep breath, took a bottle of water from the cabinet, and shut the door tight. Then I went to bed. Behind my closed eyelids, my thoughts swam together in a blurry infusion. Dancing water and lights, fire and glass, and an ugly green and orange afghan around my shoulders. I wrapped myself in the colors and finally slept.
Chapter 19. Jonah. Hey, Jonah. I lifted my gaze from the bubbles fluttering to the surface of my non-alcoholic beer. Oscar peered at me.
You still with us?
He asked.
Sorry? You okay, man?
Sure. Great. I took a sip and pretended to be interested in the people moving and talking around us. Theo had to work late at Vegas Inc., so it was just Oscar and Dina sitting across from me at the tall table in the lift bar at the Aria Hotel, one of the few that didn't allow smoking anywhere on premises. The lift was a far cry from the unfussy restaurants we usually hung out in, or the little house Oscar and Dina rented in Belvedere. The lift had huge, thick pillars of what looked like gold tree bark rising up from a carpet of swirling purple and violet. Guests drank $12 cocktails at purple tables and chairs, and a solid gold wall backed the bar. It was elegantly gaudy, to my mind, but I needed the distraction. Or so I told myself. I'd never been dissatisfied with our usual hangouts before, but Casey Dawson had splashed color and light into my life, and now what had been usual for me now seemed plain and drab. The lift was anything but plain and drab, but the purple made me think of Casey. Rubbed her absence in my face. Who am I kidding? Everything makes me think of Casey.
Tell me about the girl, Oscar said. I heard from Theo you had a rock star crashing with you.
Rapid Confession is on the radio 24/7 at work.
They're the big time, man. And you had their guitarist on your couch?
Not a big deal. She needed a break from the party scene, and now she's back with her band.
But she was with you for 4 days.
Oscar wagged his eyebrows.
Anything interesting happened during that time frame you'd like to report?
I expected Dina to scold her boyfriend for being crass, but her dark-eyed gaze was intent on mine.
Was she good company? Did you enjoy having her there? Tell us everything.
I knew Dina's interest was slightly more refined. She studied classical literature and Middle Eastern poetry, and was a true romantic. Still, it was an anomaly. I'd let someone else into my circle, and the curiosity flowed off them in waves, battering me from all sides. I took a sip of my fake beer to help quell my irritation. They meant well, but I felt like a kid coming home to report a first crush. There's not much to tell, I said. She mostly rested up while I worked at the hot shop or A1. I went to dinner with the family on Sunday, and she hung alone with the pizza.
You canceled with us, though, to stay with her, Oscar said.
He smiled knowingly over his beer.
And Theo said she's hot.
He did? I took a sip of beer. That's interesting.
He did.
Oscar leaned back in his chair.
So you had a beautiful rock star in your apartment for 4 days. Please tell me you did not let a situation like that end with a hug or a handshake.
Dina swatted Oscar's arm.
Will you see her again?
I don't know. I don't think so. She wants to get out of her band contract, but it's not easy to do. Even if it's something she wants to do.
Would you like to see her again?
With everything I am. I don't have much say in it. She's going to be on tour for months.
There are magical devices called phones.
Dina rested the heel of her hand on her chin, eyebrows raised.
You can call her. Can you not? Text? Skype?
She needs space to figure out what she wants without interference from me, I said. Oscar started to reply, but I cut him off.
Look, I don't know what's going to happen next, okay? What I do know is I have a lot of work to do before the gallery opening, so it's better not to have distractions.
A short, tense silence fell, followed by the guilt that always assailed me on the rare instances I snapped at anyone. I started to apologize for being shitty company, but Oscar and Dina weren't my best friends for nothing. Their concern for me was palpable in that noisy, ostentatious bar. Oscar leaned toward me, his expression serious for a change, while Dina slipped her hand across the table into mine.
Tell us.
I set my beer glass down, turned it round and round on the purple table.
She has to go,
I said quietly. They'd ruin her if she broke her contract. She needs to decide what's best for her. And I couldn't ask her to stay anyway.
Why not?
I gave them a look.
You know why not.
You know why I don't get involved. I have nothing to offer her but friendship, and even that has an expiration date. I scrubbed my hands through my hair.
It was stupid. The whole thing.
Reckless and stupid.
What about what you want, Jonah? Dina asked. What do you want?
I looked at my friends, who'd been in love with each other for as long as I'd known them. Dina's search for deeper meanings was the perfect counterbalance to Oscar, who skimmed along life's surface like a jet ski. She grounded him. He made her laugh. My gaze strayed to their locked hands, his dark skin against her pale fingers entwined. I remembered Casey's hand in mine at the diner. It wasn't enough. I want more. But I couldn't have more. I mustered a smile. I want to finish my installation. And I want another $8 non-alcoholic beer. Oscar burst out laughing and seemed content to let the matter drop. Dina's smile fell soft on me the rest of the evening, and I knew she wouldn't let me off so easily. Being the perpetual designated driver, I dropped off Oscar and Dina at their house southwest of the strip. "Don't forget," Oscar said, clasping my hand and pulling me in for a half hug before he climbed out. "Great Basin camping trip in 3 weeks. Make sure you take the time off from work." "Already been scheduled," I said. The cheer in my voice was forced. I worried about the loss of work in the hot shop and the loss of tip money from my job, but Oscar and Dina had planned this trip for months. They wanted the time with me, and I couldn't say no. They were my oldest friends, the only friends I couldn't push away when my last biopsy results were made known. They were ingrained in the fabric of my life, no matter how long a life it turned out to be. Dina came around to the driver's side wearing the maternal look that meant I had a lecture coming, usually prefaced with a quote from her favorite poet, Rumi. "That which is false troubles the heart, but truth brings joyous tranquility," she said. "And what does that mean, love?" "It means you miss this girl. Don't pretend you don't. You'll feel better for being true to your feelings." She rested her hands on the open window. "I don't like to talk about your schedule, you know that." I nodded. My schedule had become a euphemism for the time I had left. The gallery opening was the finish line I needed to cross. "And I know you want to leave a beautiful piece of art in your wake. Your focus is solely on the destination, not the journey." Dina placed her palm on my cheek. "Shouldn't you also try to do the most important thing along the way?" I covered her hand with mine. "What's that?" "Be happy."
Chapter 20. Casey, Salt Lake City. Day 9 without Jonah. Day 5 without booze. I watched the bubbles dance in my champagne flute, but I didn't drink it. Not a drop since that last drunken night in the Denver hotel room. Every nerve ending in my body screamed for a sip, but I only turned the delicate glass around and around. Did they give sobriety chips for making it 5 days? I doubted it, but they should. Every fucking hour where I didn't give in to the need was a battle. I sat in a huge half-moon booth with 10 other people in the VIP section of some club. The music was loud and relentless. I could feel the bass thudding in my chest. Bodies writhed on the dance floor, one level below. In our booth, talk and laughter zigzagged around me. The girls from RC were flirting with the guys from our new opening act. Everyone was happy our latest set of shows had gone well. But all I could think was I was in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing with the wrong people. I sat wedged between Jimmy Ray and Phil Miller, the owner of this club and, no coincidence, the Pony Club in Las Vegas. He turned to me now, shifting his bulk toward me with a gust of sweat and too much cologne.
"So, you're my little troublemaker, are you?" he said.
He smoked a cigar that smelled vaguely like licorice. I hated licorice. My shoulders flinched up and stayed there. I had 4 people on my right, 5 on my left. I was stuck tight at the middle of the booth.
"You know, it's gonna cost me a small fortune to fix up my green room."
"Sorry about that," I muttered. Jimmy turned our way.
"Come on, Phil. Let's not jump right into business without a little pleasure first, right?"
He slung his arm around me, his hand grazing my bare arm. I was wearing a silk tank top layered over another, tighter tank top, both low-cut. Phil's gaze seemed permanently glued to my cleavage.
Casey likes to have fun is all. Sometimes a little too much fun.
The pony club's owner chewed on the wet mouth of his cigar.
Hell, I can't blame you, sweetheart. I like to have fun, too.
His right hand landed on my thigh, over my leather pants. I brushed it off, humiliation and anger heating my face. Phil and Jimmy exchanged a look I didn't like, and then Jimmy whispered in my ear,
"A lawsuit would be really bad right now, kitten. Our label doesn't have the deep pockets of a Sony or Interscope."
He gave my shoulder a squeeze.
"You'd be doing us all a big favor if you put Phil Miller in a really good mood."
My head turned toward him slowly. "And how, exactly, would you like me to do that, Jimmy?" He leaned back a little, laughing.
"What's with the blue steel glare? Just have a few drinks with him. Maybe a dance or two. See what happens."
See what happens. Suddenly, sitting in that booth, surrounded by people in a crowded club, I felt utterly alone. If Jonah were here, he'd break Jimmy's nose and Phil's grabby fingers. That's what would happen. But he wasn't here. I had to stand up for myself. I didn't punch Jimmy in the nose. I didn't want to hurt my own hand that I needed to play guitar and write songs. Instead, I grabbed Jimmy's gin and tonic and tossed it in his face. The others at the table ceased their shouty conversations and went silent under the pulsing music, staring at us. Or, in the case of the guys from the opening act, laughing. Jimmy pulled out a handkerchief. Small ice cubes and gin glittered on the lapels of his coat.
"That was a little hasty, kitten."
"It was overdue," I said, and shouldered my small purse. I climbed onto my chair, my boot heels digging sharp furrows in the upholstery, and then onto the table. Glass toppled and spilled as I picked my way across.
"What the hell are you doing?"
"I'm quitting. What's it look like I'm doing?" I hopped off the table and landed without breaking an ankle, which would have put a serious damper on my exit, and strode out of the club. Voices shouted after me, Lola the loudest. But I kept going without looking back. I left the club and hailed a taxi. The ride to the hotel felt like ages, minutes ticking by. More time spent out of touch with Jonah. Not a word in 9 days, or even a text. My muted phone lit up with texts galore from Lola, from Jimmy, and then phone calls from both. I ignored all of them. In my suite, with the door shut and locked, I sat on the bed, my heart pounding. Phone in hand, I looked to the purple glass bottle on my nightstand. It now held a few ounces of my favorite perfume. I inhaled as my finger picked out Jonah's number, but my finger hovered over the call button. It was 2 in the morning on a Friday. He might still be at work. He might not be able to talk. I could text instead. What if he was doing better now? Maybe he'd moved on, gotten back to his schedule, focused and on track without me to distract him. Maybe he meant what he said about it being better if I didn't contact him again. My gaze returned to the perfume bottle, a tiny little blob of glass, but it had been my talisman of strength and willpower these last 9 days. I had to tell Jonah I quit the band, but I'd give him an out. A text was easy to ignore, and if he did, I wouldn't send another. "I quit the band. I hope you are well. Heart, Casey." I hit send before I could rethink the heart emoji. I watched as the text status read delivered, then read. No little rolling dots of an answering text came in. "Okay, that's fine," I said, my voice shaking. And then I let out a startled cry as my phone lit up with Jonah's number. "Hi,
I said, blinking through the strange and sudden tears in my eyes.
Are you okay?
His deep voice, full of concern and, I was sure of it, happiness. I am. I'm really good. I did it. I quit the band. Just now, tonight. Jimmy tried to pimp me out to the pony club guy.
He what?
But I threw a drink in his face. For real. It felt amazing.
Good for you,
Jonah said, but I could hear the anger coloring his words. So, now I might be ruined for life. Or I might have gotten out by the skin of my teeth. I don't know yet, but I know it was the right thing. I can feel it. And I wouldn't have had the strength to do it if not for you.
No,
he said.
You would have gotten there. I knew you had it in you.
A teary laugh burst out of me. I didn't.
I'm really happy for you, Casey,
Jonah said quietly, and I thought I could imagine him standing outside his limo, waiting for a fare, his back turned on the world so he could talk to me. And he was smiling. Me too, I said, but now I'm a homeless vagrant bag lady. I drew in a breath as tears filled my eyes again, pushed up on a tide of emotion I could hardly contain. Got any hot real estate tips? Jonah said nothing for a moment. And when he spoke, his voice was thick and gruff.
I hear Las Vegas is nice this time of year.
My hand flew to my heart, and I needed a second before I could manage a whispery reply. I was hoping you'd say that.
I was hoping you'd ask.
I'm still scared I'm going to fail you like Audrey did.
You won't fail me,
he said.
You're nothing like Audrey.
The intensity in his words struck me right in the heart and sent a tingle skimming over me. I wiped my tears, bolstered by his belief in me.
There's no failing anyway,
Jonah said.
You'll be my friend, and I'll be yours. And we'll take it day by day, okay?
I nodded against the phone. Day by day. Moment by moment. Okay, I said, and heaved a breath. I can do that.
Me too,
he said.
My fare's coming out. I have to go.
I felt as if a heavy burden had been lifted from my shoulders, and whatever doubts I had about quitting the band were blown to ash. I'll see you soon, Jonah. Good night.
Good night, Casey.
Part 2. We do not remember days. We remember moments. Cesare Pavese. Chapter 21. Casey. I was home. 212 Bank Street, apartment 2C, Las Vegas, Nevada. From my living room window, I had a view of Flamingo Avenue, and a few blocks beyond was the Strip. I could just see the red of Hera's enormous sign. I had one bedroom, one bath, a tiny kitchen, and postage stamp balcony. It was all mine. And 3 blocks from Jonah's place. I'd left the Rapid Confessions tour 4 days earlier, with 2 suitcases of clothes, my acoustic guitar, and a $30,000 settlement. Jimmy, with the inadvertent help of a very pissed-off genie, had been able to get me out of my contract. An executive at our label had a niece who could play guitar, and they booked her on a flight before the words, I quit, had left my mouth. The powers that be crunched some numbers and came up with $30,000. It was what was left after my advance was paid back, minus fees, damage costs to the pony club, and projected royalties on tour sales so far. Jimmy said I was lucky to get anything, but I had a feeling I'd been robbed 6 ways from Tuesday. Broken contract or not. Lola confirmed it. She called while I was hanging around my new place, waiting for my last piece of furniture, a couch, to arrive. You got fucking ripped off, she told me from Vancouver. $30,000? Are you shitting me? Jimmy says we're going to pull down at least $1 million each after this tour. Each. I heard her exhale a draft from her cigarette. I don't know, Case. I felt a little pang at the $1 million each. I was human, after all.
but mostly, I just felt happy. It's all good, Lola. I got a new place and started a new job.
You told me, slinging cocktails at Caesar's Palace? You honestly think being around free booze all night is going to be better for you than the band?
Yeah, I do. I didn't drink booze because it was there, I said. I drank because it made it easier to pretend.
Pretend what?
I shrugged and ran my fingers along the cheap tile. But it was my cheap tile on my kitchen counter. Pretend that I was doing what I wanted to do. Being on my own like this is better for me. Lola hissed a sigh.
No one put a gun to your head to join the band.
Lola, I said firmly, I love you. You're my best friend. You saved my ass, and I'll never be able to repay you for that.
If I'd kept going like I was, I would have wound up dead or in an extremely bad place. You know this.
Another sigh, this one softer.
Yeah, I know. So, how about the simple fact this sucks because I miss you?
I smiled. I miss you too.
How's the new chick?
She's okay.
Jeannie doesn't hate her. Yet.
Give her time.
How's your new place?
You didn't go overboard with your huge fortune, did you?
30 grand sounds like a lot, but it's going to go fast. Especially on a cocktail waitress salary.
No kidding. I had to buy a car, used, and furnish my little place. They just opened an IKEA here last month. My apartment looks like a live advertisement. I didn't have the guts to tell her I also spent $5,000 on a top-of-the-line bed, currently en route, or possibly already delivered, to Jonah's place. It could be adjusted to raise the head or foot, so a person could sleep in any position they wanted. I couldn't stand the idea of Jonah spending one more night in that goddamned recliner just to keep his chest elevated. And I knew he'd never buy a bed like this on his own.
So what happens next?
Lola asked.
You're going to write your own songs again? Become a YouTube star? I'm not being facetious. You're really talented, hun. This could be the start of something big.
Thanks, Lo, I said, my eyes turning to the perfume bottle on the windowsill. I smiled. I'm going to take it slow. See what happens.
A pause. And how's your friend? The guy with the heart condition?
He's fine.
He and his brother have been coming over whenever they could to help me assemble the furniture.
The thought made my smile broaden. Jonah had taken his personal time between the hot shop and A1 to help me, dragging Theo with him whenever his brother wasn't working at Vegas Inc. Lola's next words killed my smile.
Your friend, Jonah, can he lift heavy stuff like furniture?
God, everyone's a doctor. Of course, I said. He's totally fine.
Totally fine? A week ago you told me he was dying.
I clenched my teeth. I could control the words when they stayed in my head. Hearing someone else say them made emotion surge up in my gut. I was in a bad place when I said that, I said. Poor choice of words.
Casey.
He's fine. He's strong, fucking hell. I mean it, Lola. I have to go.
Where?
Lola demanded.
Back to burying your head in the sand? This isn't like a bill you can't pay, so you chuck it in the garbage and pretend you never got it. And the next thing you know, they shut off the lights and you're left in the dark.
I know it's what you do, Casey. You just brush it aside and pretend everything's okay until it isn't. It's not like that, I whispered.
No. Sure sounds like it.
He's fine. He really is. My thoughts went back to when Jonah picked me up at the airport 10 days ago. He held up a big sign with my name on it and joked that it was the last time he'd be my limo driver. I threw my arms around him and hugged him tight, and I felt his heartbeat against my chest. Strong and steady.
So he's been cured?
Shut up, Lola. He's fine right now. I'm not going to spend whatever time we have dwelling on maybes and what-ifs. And it's fucking awful of you to try to ruin my happiness.
I'm not trying to ruin anything for you, Casey. I'm trying to protect you. Well, I'm done needing your protection. I know what I'm doing.
Do you?
Because it sounds like you've taken yourself out of one shitty situation and plopped yourself smack in the middle of another. A pause. Are you two together? Please tell me you're not crazy enough to get involved with a guy who's really sick. We're just friends. Good friends. One of the best I've had in a while. He makes me feel like I can be myself. I sounded petulant, but I had made a plan to live moment by moment. I wasn't ready to look ahead 4 months. Not yet. Maybe never. Maybe his meds are working.
Well, I'm happy for you, Casey, Lola said, pulling me out of my thoughts. And I want the best for you. But I don't want you to become lost.
Lost?
When the lights finally go out.
I bit my lip, trying to find something to say, some retort. My doorbell rang. I have to go, Lola. The IKEA people are here.
Okay, hon. Take care.
Love you. Bye. I hung up and set the phone on the counter. Then turned it to silent. Then face down. I answered the front door. Not to IKEA delivery men, but to Jonah. My face broke out in a huge smile as if I hadn't just seen him 2 days before, and the blood rushed to my cheeks. Jeez, get a grip. He looked handsome as hell in simple jeans and a dark green t-shirt. He stood with his hands jammed in the front pockets of his jeans, a bemused look on his face. You're not my couch, I said, feigning confusion.
Not since last I checked.
But speaking of bulky household furnishings, I got a very interesting delivery yesterday, he said, rocking back on his heels. Did you?
I did. You wouldn't know anything about an expensive-as-hell sleep-number-adjustable state-of-the-art remote-control mega-bed I found on my doorstep, would you?
I pretended to be alarmed. On your doorstep? God, I hope not. That bed sounds awesome. I would have thought it'd come with actual people to set it up.
Oh, it did. A whole team of technicians who were under orders to not take no for an answer.
He sighed and shook his head, his expression turning grave.
Case, it's too much. Too expensive. You didn't need to do that.
Yes, I did, I said. I wouldn't have quit the band if you hadn't given me a place to crash and get my head on straight. This is my thank you. I planted one hand on my hip. Are you going to stand in the door all afternoon? You're letting in all that god-awful heat. Jonah stared at me a moment longer, eyes narrowed. I stared back. What?
I'm debating whether it'll do any good to argue with you.
It won't, I said. In or out? You're like a goddamn cat. He relented with a small laugh and a shake of his head, and bent to pick up something from the ground next to him.
So, this is your housewarming present. Of which I was quite proud until you sent me Megabed.
He arched a brow.
I should have made you a damn chandelier.
I ignored his sarcasm, too busy staring at the beautiful lamp in his hands. It was two lamps, actually, made from square-shaped antique amber whiskey bottles. The bottom had been cut out of each, and oblong, Edison light bulbs were attached to the neck inside. The cords came out the bottlenecks and were woven through small links of wrought iron chain that connected the two lamps as a pair. Oh my God. I stared at the lights, then at him. They're beautiful. You made these? What am I saying? Of course you did.
Want to test them out?
I bit my lip, glancing around. I don't know where. Oh, the balcony. We went to the sliding glass door that led to my tiny balcony overlooking the street. I plan to have a sitting area out here. Potted plants and a little chair and table to have coffee in the morning. Jonah gave me a look.
You? In this heat?
I need to get used to it. No one likes someone who bitches about the weather every other minute.
You got that right, he muttered.
I gave him a little shove toward the balcony door. Out. Lights. Hang. He strung up the whiskey bottle lamps on two plant hooks, one slightly lower than the other, and plugged them into a covered outdoor socket. Lit from within, the amber glass glowed, as if still filled with whiskey. They're gorgeous, I said. I can't wait to see them at night. I glanced up at him beside me. Now I have two Jonah Fletcher originals. I won't have to work at Caesar's after all. eBay, here I come. His eyes rolled.
I wouldn't put in your 2-week notice just yet.
I'd never part with them anyway. But I think it's only a matter of time before the world learns how talented you are. He looked down at me.
I could say the same about you.
The air thickened between us, and his brown eyes were soft. When his eyes held mine like this, I felt like he was looking down deep, to a place I rarely examined myself, but where I might have a good song lurking if I did. The seconds ticked. I was supposed to look away, but I didn't look away, and neither did he, until a passing car screeched at a red light, the sound tearing the moment. Jonah jammed his hands in his pocket, and my eyes roved for something to look at besides him. So, the whiskey bottles, I said, nodding at the lights. Are you repurposing my bad habits? He smiled.
No, just a friendly reminder.
Of what?
That you can find beauty everywhere, even in the things that scare you the most.
A warmth spread in my chest, and I almost teased him for being deep, but my phone call with Lola came back to me, and how she'd voiced what actually scared me the most, being lost in the dark. I turned my eyes to my new lamps, then to the man who made them. Lola's wrong. Somehow, some way, his lights will stay on, and I'll never be lost in the dark.
Chapter 22 Jonah. When Casey's couch arrived, it took her, Theo, and me half the evening to put it together. When it was done, and the empty box and pages of instructions were thrown out, her apartment was complete. Well, she said, surveying the finished product, it's definitely like one of those model rooms in the IKEA store. They should pay me for the free advertising. Theo mustered his version of a smile. He'd warmed up to Casey, slightly, over the last 10 days. His eyes didn't automatically roll when she talked to him, and he actually engaged with a couple of her teasing remarks. Now, as we readied to leave, she threw her arms around his neck.
Thanks, Teddy, she said and kissed his cheek. Is it okay to call you that?
It was definitely not okay. I braced myself for Theo's harsh rebuke against being called Teddy, but he only muttered something about waiting for me in the truck and slipped out. Wide-eyed, I watched him go, then swung my gaze back to Casey. He hates Teddy. Nobody calls him Teddy. She grinned, shrugged.
Didn't seem to mind it coming from me.
Besides, it fits him.
He's got a soft side.
Yeah, he does, I said. A short silence curled up between us. It happened often since she'd come back. The jokes and teasing fell away, and it was just Casey and me in each other's space, waiting for something to happen next. A word or a touch that might change everything. But it can't. I can't take her down that road with me because, eventually, we'll come to the place where I have to go on, and she can't follow. Okay, I said. I'm going to head out before Theo throws a fit. Casey put her arms around my neck and gave me a kiss on the cheek, just as she had Theo. I felt her body all along mine, and my breath caught. My own arms were stiff and careful, as if I might break her. Or break me.
Thanks for helping me out tonight, and all the other nights, she said,
her hands gliding down my shoulders before falling away. You're welcome, I said. Have a good night, Case.
You too. Oh, hey, I was thinking about stopping by the hot shop sometime this week. Can I bring you guys some lunch?
Again? That'll be the 5th time in 2 weeks. You don't have to feed us.
I know, she said. but I want to. Leave it to me, Fletcher. I'll take care of you.
It's too much. Say no. Keep to the routine.
Fat chance. Casey was here now, and part of my routine. I told her to come back to Vegas because I missed her, and wanted her in my life. But I had no idea how hard it would be to keep her at a safe distance. I was a starving man at a banquet, hungry every day for what was right in front of me.
Sounds great then, I said, and got the hell out of there before I did something stupid.
Theo sat behind the wheel of his idling truck, but instead of a scowl or a gripe about making him wait, he only watched me get in, studied my face, as if he was looking for something.
What is it now?
Theo turned back, facing forward.
Nothing.
He drove us along mostly empty side streets in residential Vegas, apartment complexes and small homes on either side. The strip wasn't visible, but I could see its glow above the rooftops. We hit a red light and Theo said,
"She's into you."
I stared at my brother, my mouth going dry.
"You think?" "It's not obvious."
"Enlighten me." He shrugged.
"The way she looks at you."
My heart jumped in my chest. I did my best to sound casual as hell, and not like a kid in junior high.
"How was she looking at me?"
Theo glanced at me sideways.
"Like she can't stop. And you're just as bad. I'm amazed we got the couch built."
I faced forward, my thoughts running rampant at this revelation. Of course, my eyes were drawn to Casey any time she was in the room. I couldn't help it. She was radiant. But to hear she'd been doing the same to me. A junior high warmth spread through me. A soft glow of hope that I'd been keeping tamped down.
"She's afraid she'll fail me,"
I said slowly. "Pull an Audrey."
"So, you've talked about it?"
Theo asked.
"Being together? Is that why she moved back?"
"No. We're just friends. It's all we can be." I rubbed the place on my cheek where Casey had kissed me.
"It's hard enough."
"But you have feelings for her," Theo said. It was not a question, and his voice was curiously quiet.
Maybe. I don't know, I said. "Sometimes I think I shouldn't have told her to come back here."
"But you did," Theo said in that same low tone.
"Because you do have feelings for her."
I sighed, partially in surprise that I could talk about this with Theo, when I expected another lecture. It felt good to talk about this with my brother, instead of being walled off by his worry.
"She looks at you like she can't stop."
We'd arrived at my apartment complex. Theo threw the truck in park and turned to face me.
"What do you want to do?"
"What can I do? I don't have time and she knows it. I told her about the last biopsy."
"Well, there you go," he said, waving his hand. "You told her."
"Yeah? And?"
"And she's still here."
Chapter 23 Jonah. Friday night. I was lying in my bed, reading, or trying to. My focus kept wandering. 3 a.m. is the stillest, quietest part of night, even in a city like Vegas, and the silence amplified the thoughts rattling in my head and heart. They filled the room, demanding to be acknowledged, begging to be answered.
"Casey, knock it off,"
I said under my breath.
"What is she doing right now?"
She would have gotten off her shift an hour ago. Been home 20 minutes later if she wasn't delayed.
"She's sleeping," I said. "It's what you should be doing."
I tossed the book aside, clicked off the lamp, and settled into my bed.
"She bought me a bed."
"I'm aware," I said. The bed was infinitely more comfortable than the chair, but I still couldn't sleep. I lay on the right side. The left side seemed to stretch for miles, like snowy tundra. Cold and barren.
"I miss her."
"Shut it, Fletcher.
Go to sleep."
I closed my eyes, knowing it was futile. Then my cell phone on the nightstand buzzed a text. Damn it, Theo. But it wasn't Theo. I sat up, the heart in my chest thudding. Casey, are you awake? I managed to wait a whole 10 seconds before replying. Always. What's up?
I called my dad.
Holy shit, I whispered, knowing what it meant for her. I waited to see if she'd say more. No blinking little dots indicating she was typing. I hesitated, 1,000 replies at the ready. Replies that could comfort from a safe distance. How did it go? Are you all right? Tell me about it. I texted back, I can come over. No punctuation. Neither a question nor a statement. Vague enough, she could tell me no. The rolling dots. And then her reply, okay. I could have walked to Casey's apartment, but I shaved 3 minutes off by driving. Outside her door, I hesitated.
What are you doing?
Being a friend. The stifling night air chewed up the word friend and spit it back out at me. A friend who makes house calls. I knocked on the door and heard a muffled, come in. Casey's plant-filled apartment smelled of her perfume and the scented candles she loved. I inhaled deeply, both to catch my breath from the flight of stairs and to fill myself with her. She sat curled up on her couch, her legs tucked under her. The coffee table in front of her littered with crumpled tissues. Only the lamp beside the couch was on, glowing yellow over her hunched shoulders. Her gaze flicked to me as I sat in the chair opposite, even with red-rimmed eyes and a face swollen from crying. She looked incredibly beautiful.
You want anything?
She asked. Something to drink, or? I shook my head. I'm fine. I cleared my throat. My nerves perched on the edge of their seats, staring. Both the smooth skin of her legs and the way they were folded, small into a corner of the couch, woke some primal male urge in me. I wanted to protect her, to hold her and shield her from whatever hurt her, to put my body between her and the world, and while I was at it, wrap those legs around me and slide inside her.
I'm sorry it's so late,
she said. I was awake anyway. I leaned forward. Tell me what happened.
Would you? Never mind.
What? What can I do?
Anything. I'd do anything for you.
Her eyes met mine and her voice was tiny as it asked,
would you mind sitting next to me? I promise I won't try to jump your bones or anything.
Sure, I said. I moved from the chair to the couch, leaving a few inches between us. But she closed the distance at once, scooting next to me. Automatically, my arm went around her shoulders.
Because that's what friends do when a friend is upset.
Except my friend smelled amazing, and I was hyper-aware of my friend's skin touching mine, and the way I could feel the soft roundness of her breast against my chest. I expected her to cry. I welcomed a weep fest. It would help bolster my insistence that I was only being a kind, supportive friend. But she snuggled up close and wrapped her arm around my waist, and when she spoke, her voice was watery but calm.
I didn't plan on calling my dad, she said. I wasn't even thinking about him today. They accidentally double-booked my shift with another girl, so I got off work early, around 8. I came home and turned on the TV, surfed around for a while, and landed on Say Yes to the Dress.
She tilted her head up to look at me.
Have you ever seen it?
Never heard of it, I said.
It's this stupid, silly, fabulous reality show where they follow different brides-to-be as they go shopping for their wedding dress. They bring along a best friend to help them choose, or a bunch of bitchy friends, or their overbearing mother. But the episode tonight,
Casey sniffed.
One bride brought along some friends, and her father.
She inhaled, and I felt the fluttery shudder of her breath huff against my chest.
I held her tighter. So she's trying on dresses, and they're all pretty, but none of them are quite it. Until finally she tries on the one. And her whole group knows it's the one because they all start crying. The bride cried, and then her dad cried. And then I cried because I wanted what she had so badly.
The dress?
Casey elbowed me in the side. Smartass. The dress was awful, actually. Mermaid style. She looked like she was wrapped in bandages. The point is, I wanted what she had with her dad.
Her body wilted, leaning harder on mine. Tell me more, I said.
This dad? He'd been a Marine, retired now, and super tough-looking, but a total softy when it came to his daughter. He didn't bother to hide his feelings. He told the camera she would always be his little girl. He said how much he loved her and was proud of her.
Casey's voice cracked, then broke.
This girl has this beautiful relationship with her dad that I'll never have with mine. It hurts. I hate how it hurts. I want not to care, but I can't stop caring. I can't. He's my dad. I love him. Isn't he supposed to feel the same?
He is, I said. Still holding her, I reached for the tissue box on the table and plucked one.
Thanks,
she said, dabbing her eyes. So, you called him?
Like a dummy. I thought, I may not have what that girl and her father have, but I can start somewhere. I can try. I didn't let myself overthink it. Just grabbed my phone and called him. And he answered, not my mom. And I thought, that's a sign.
She reached for another tissue.
Yeah, it was a sign all right. That I'm a fucking idiot.
You're not an idiot, I said. What did he say?
He was quiet, as usual. But I was nervous, so I started babbling like a moron. I told him I'd quit a successful rock band and threw away millions of dollars and fame and fortune so I could sling cocktails at Caesar's because I knew it was healthier for me. I was better for it. I told him I was living on my own, paying my own rent and writing my own music. I said I was happy, even if my songs weren't seeing the light of day outside my notebook yet.
She sniffed and burrowed her face closer to my chest. I slid my hand into her hair. What did he say?
He said, okay then.
I waited for more, but nothing came. Okay then what? I said.
That was it. Okay then. And he hung up on me. He just hung up on me.
My mouth hung half open and useless as she sobbed against my chest, her tears wetting my shirt. I put my other arm around her as well and held her close.
I'm sorry,
I said. I'm so sorry.
She pulled free and fired the balled-up tissue across the room. I'm so tired of feeling like this. I feel so pathetic, wanting my own father to need me in his life.
She stared down at her empty hands.
He doesn't need me.
I need you. It was the truth. And sometimes truth refuses to be contained. It bursts out, usually when it's least convenient, but also when it's needed most. She smiled wanly, laid her hand over my chest, where her tears had dampened my shirt.
You're sweet. And I had no one, and you gave me friendship and a place to live.
I need you, I said again. Her eyes settled on mine.
You do?
I nodded. God, she was so close to me, I could smell her skin. Sweet, like caramel. Friends serve different purposes, right? Some things you can only say to certain people. Some things you can say to others. Casey's gaze was unwavering.
Tell me something you can't tell your other friends,
she said softly.
Something you can only tell me.
For a few seconds, I was lost in the blue pools of her eyes, struck mute by the thousands of things I wanted to tell her. I'm scared, I said. Her hand crept into mine.
Okay.
But who wouldn't be?
She didn't say anything. I felt her acceptance and trust pouring into me from her eyes. I could spill my guts to her and she'd listen, or I could keep it to myself and she'd understand. Everyone is watching me all the time. I feel like I can't do or say anything without weighing it carefully, because everything I do means something, even when it doesn't. I can't raise my voice or get angry or irritated because I can't leave that kind of memory. I have only a finite amount of words left to say. I have to choose them carefully. She nodded and let me continue, which I did, telling her more than I meant to, telling her what I couldn't tell anyone else. The words poured out of me and into Casey's lap. My actions, too. I'm being constantly watched, studied, examined. Am I tired from a long day at the shop, or is it something worse? They treat me like I'm breakable, like the whole world is a potential threat. Someone might say the wrong thing and upset me, and God forbid I should ever be upset. But I am upset. Casey nodded. I get scared or pissed off that this happened to me, I said. I took care of myself, you know. I exercised like a bastard. I ate right, and I still got really fucking sick. Like being hit by a truck, even though I looked both ways and the street was empty. I rubbed my hand hard on my knee so I wouldn't clench it into a fist. The other held Casey's tight. I worried I was bruising her fingers, but I couldn't let go. So, yeah, I'm scared, I said. And that's something I can't tell my other friends. She let go my hand, and then she was in my arms, hugging me around the neck. Thank you for telling me. I froze, my senses infused with her, the softness of her hair on my cheek, the caramel scent of her warm skin. My arms went around her, stiffly at first, but she was so soft. She melted into me, wanting to be held. And, like telling her what I couldn't tell anyone else, I wanted to hold her like I held no one else. Stroke her hair, inhale her sweetness, kiss her, and never stop. Her head lifted off my shoulder, but her arms still ringed my neck. She looked at me, her lips parted expectantly, her eyes warm and soft. In the silence, she raised her hand and laid her palm on my chest. My heart pounded back under her touch, and a soft smile came to her lips.